Hello. The following segments are from questions that came into the NASM office through email after the webinar, and we wanted to share these questions and answers with you. This question was actually asked during the webinar last night, but someone emailed it in again. What type of expenses would come up with that I would not expect? Well, there's always things that come up that no one can ever plan for. And, you know, obviously during the course of my business, there's all kinds of things that have come up with that I never thought of. Some of the extra expenses might be extra items that you just decide to purchase that will make your workday easier, such as extra tools or a drill or a different kind of tool or a drill. We happen to be predominantly an all-woman company, and this past year, although I had not planned for it, I decided to buy tomboy tools as they fit a woman's hand better. They're not expensive, but I thought they were worth the cost as they made life easier for many of our staff. And as an added bonus, because, again, we are predominantly all women, I bought the pink tools. One, because they supported a cause that benefits women, and two, because pink tools are pretty hard to lose. We've also gone through many tool bags over the years just because they get a lot of wear and tear, and I can't always plan when I'm going to need to get a new one. We've had to replace digital cameras. We've had to replace the disc that goes with the cameras, and those are things that we can't really tell when you know that camera is going to quit working. We've also had to update our computer when one of them crashed, something I was not at all expecting, and then we had the IT cost to help recover information. And you also have to know that there may be things as you're going midstream and growing your business that you find will work better for you to grow your company. We recently switched to a different type of software that I think will help us run our business better, but we have the software expense that I had not originally counted on. And then there are things that we absolutely have no control over, like gas prices, and you have to take things like that into account as well. You know, it's the little things that add up, and sometimes they come out of the blue when you least expect them, but setting your rates properly, that's what's going to help offset those unexpected costs. This question actually was asked by many people. If you were Mary, the new move manager, how would you have estimated John and Jane's move? But I have to remember that at one time I was a new move manager, and if you ask a lot of people, they'll tell you that sometimes I still feel like one. And I'll answer that question in a minute, but I actually want to talk about something else first. I'm a firm believer in establishing a strong rapport with my clients, and it helps me to estimate their job better. And I think that listening intently to what the client is saying to you verbally and also with their body language helps you to know how to estimate and to come up with a move plan that's not only agreeable to the client but to you as well. I mean, I have to like the move plan that I have come up with in order to sell it. You know, I hope that even before I put my pencil to paper during the estimate, I know something about my client's life and their habits. And I really want to know who they are and what they've accomplished so I can help recreate a home for them. And this part is it's really important to me, but I think it is also the key to designing a move plan, to estimating the job correctly, and then selling the job to the client. I think there are many times that someone has indicated that they are not going to take something with them, and then I question their decision because they've just had a heartfelt conversation about that same item, and it doesn't make sense to me why they wouldn't take something that they just so lovingly described to me. And again, I want to get to know that person that I'm moving. You know, what estimating method I use depends on my connection with the client, and someone who demands a flat rate that is a guaranteed rate even before I walk through their home really truly is sending me a message that they're not going to hire me unless I comply with their terms. And I have some choices here. You know, I can either do as the client has asked, I can choose to walk away from the job, or I can try to build a rapport with the client and then, you know, suggest to them that there might actually be a better way for me to do their estimate. However, if I am going to suggest something different than what they've asked for, I have to be prepared that that client is not going to hire me. And I also want everybody to remember that there will be times that you know that the client is not the right fit for you. I have a really good friend who gave me a rock that says, listen to your inner voice. And I really do truly listen to my inner voice. there are clients that you need to learn to walk away from, because those are the jobs that will come back to haunt you. So let me go back to the original question. How did Mary estimate the job? Well, Mary kind of knew even before she walked into John and Jane's home that this wasn't going to be a typical estimate for her. During her initial phone call, she recognized some issues that she might encounter, and her physical site visit to their home confirmed many of the assumptions that she had started to make while she was on the phone with them. Mary had scheduled the appointment time so that she could spend extra time with John and Jane, and she was very glad that she did. And in the hour and a half that she had been in the house, she had yet to go into the basement, if you remember that from the PowerPoint. John and Jane's verbal answers to Mary's questions also gave Mary many clues about their monetary situation and their need to do things themselves. And she wanted to show respect for what John and Jane wanted to accomplish on their own, and she knew that awarding this control to them was really a key component in selling her services. So after careful review, Mary decided that she wanted to go back to her office, and she worked up several move plans that she thought she could present to Jane and John. Actually, in the long run, Mary took one choice with her. It was her final choice, and her choice was to sell blocks of sorting time to John and Jane so that they could actually see how well she worked, how well organized she was, and just what she could do for them. And then again, those initial blocks of time also allowed Mary to build a stronger relationship with Jane and John. It gave her better control over scheduling other jobs with other clients, and it let Jane and John control their budget. The other thing it did was it also allowed Mary to give John and Jane homework, and it showed her that when they said they would complete the task, they really would, which is something that Mary really didn't think would happen, because you have to remember, when John went to his office to get the floor plan, he sat down in his chair and fell asleep and never brought it back to Mary. So again, you know, selling blocks of time and having John and Jane complete homework really did reiterate to Mary that they really were do-it-yourselfers. The other thing is, after the initial work of sorting was done and the block of hours ran out, Mary actually had the opportunity to sell John and Jane more blocks of time to complete their packing and their unpacking, and she also used some of this time to contact estate sale companies to do a sale after John and Jane moved. However, Mary made sure that she made these phone calls while she was in John and Jane's home so that they knew that that was her block of time, because they very much knew the time of day that she arrived and the time of day that she left. And then to cover her travel costs, since she was coming and going on so many separate occasions, Mary had actually talked to John about adding an administrative fee to her final invoice. And, you know, John agreed to that because he realized that Mary was, you know, driving to and from, and she was using her gas in her vehicle to get to their residence. And what you have to remember, also, this was not the flat guaranteed not-to-exceed rate that John had originally asked for. What he really wanted was to be able to have control over his budget, and having Mary sell him blocks of time gave him this control, and he knew that he could spend exactly what he wanted to spend. It turned out really to be a happy ending for everyone, and John and Jane actually had a very, very successful transition into their new home, and Mary was happy with her choice of how she sold that job. So that is how Mary estimated John and Jane's move. Our next question was, would you please comment on this example of an estimate that I was asked to do for a set of clients? And they wrote, I did an estimate for a husband and wife, and they were very pleased with the way the move turned out. Their job was hard to estimate, so we had to keep breaking down the move into smaller segments, which logistically meant a lot of rescheduling of staff. We were paid for the work, but it was stressful knowing that we would have to do each portion of this job in segments, and billing took a lot more time. Several months later, we were called to give this client's neighbors an estimate. They had spoken in depth to their friends about how much the move cost and how we arrived at that cost, and they wanted me to do their estimate the same way. I did not want to have to estimate this job the same way I estimated their friend's job but felt trapped and I did not know what to do. Do you have any suggestions? Well, one of the things I think you need to remember, and everyone needs to remember, and this is a really important component to me, is I want to know who my referral came from before I even went to see that client. You know, if it was from their good friends and I moved their good friends, then I pretty much know that that new client knows a lot about me. They know a lot about, you know, getting a contract and all those things because their friends who I moved shared it with them. If they called me because they heard about me from a friend of a friend and a friend, then I know I have some education to do. In this particular case, again, I say you want to know who your referral source was for that client, and it's going to help you in anticipating and how you're going to react to possible situations when you get there. During the course of the conversation with your possible new clients, you really could explain to them that there are several ways to do an estimate, but the final price normally runs about the same no matter which way you choose to do the estimate. And just, you know, see what they have to say. You know, sometimes people just want to do what their friends do because it was successful and they want to have that same success. You might tell them that you don't foresee that they're going to have the same issues as their friends did, and you would actually like to bid their job under your normal circumstances. You know, they might agree with you. And again, I can't stress this enough, but I think you really have to be confident in yourself and in your billing rates and in the value that you bring to this move. And I truly believe that your confidence is what's going to help you sell that job. If they say to you, no, we don't want to hear any other way, then, you know, go ahead and bid it the way that you did their, you know, their neighbors, their friends' move. The good part about that is you can repeat the success that you had when you did their friends' move, and then you can look at the obstacles that you faced, and you can do things to improve them. You know, when you have the same situation repeatedly, you really learn from those situations and it increases your comfort level. So again, you know, look at this not as an obstacle, but look at it as an opportunity to strengthen your estimating skills. Our next question is, are there any tips you can give when doing an estimate that would help us pick which method of estimating to use? Again, I have to go back to saying I think part of being able to do an estimate well is the ability to build that rapport with your client, because then you're comfortable. Listen to what their concerns are and what part you'd like to play in their move. I have to say to you in the beginning, you know, choose one estimating system that you're comfortable with. The more you use that one system, the better you're going to get, and then you can branch out to offering different options for your client. One of the things that we talk about is one of the reasons you need to learn how long it takes you to do things is because it helps you do a better estimate, and it helps you pick that method that fits well with your style. And it really is all about being individual in what you're offering and meeting those clients' needs. Our next question is, how does the four ways of pricing add up? I kind of like the way that was written. It's like a play on words. Anyway, is one way more or less expensive than another way? What you need to know is you may have four ways of pricing, but ultimately, again, they should all be in the same ballpark. And again, estimating in those four different ways is for your comfort level, and no way is right or wrong. And the four ways that we talked about during the webinar were just ways to provide you with options that would meet your comfort level. What's comfortable to me may not be comfortable to a fellow colleague. What's comfortable to, you know, to a new move manager may not be comfortable to another new move manager. It's what you're comfortable with. I think what you have to do, or what you have to realize, is that most clients really just want to know what the final cost is going to be. However, you always have to be prepared to offer them a breakdown of how you've arrived at your price and be confident in the rates that you've set, and to go from there. The next question is, what should you do if you have totally messed up an estimate and your estimate is nowhere close to what you've quoted the client. Well, I have to tell you, when you're starting out, this is going to happen. And really and truly, I don't know anyone in the beginning who didn't underbid a job. And I think you really have to take a good look at why your estimate is wrong and do a critique of every step of the move. I have to tell you, I'm my own harshest critic, but I've learned a lot by taking the blinders off and really looking at every segment of the job. And my questions to you, I guess, would be, was the final invoice higher than what you had quoted because you didn't understand packing time, which is a key ingredient in, you know, in getting your estimate right in the first place? Did it take you longer to sort than what you had planned? Were there difficulties during the move that you ignored and you didn't address with the client? If you said yes to any of those questions, then you need to understand that those were your mistakes. They were not the mistakes of the client. And this is the cost of doing business, and you probably need to absorb those costs. And that's really hard when I say that, because no one wants to think, oh, my gosh, I made a mistake, you know, I'm going to have to absorb another error. But, you know, mistakes make us stronger, and we don't repeat them if we keep looking at, well, where was I wrong on this? Well, I need to go back and practice. You know, I need to learn, you know, I need to learn a better way to project packing cost or unpacking cost, or, you know, I was really off on how long it took me to measure the new apartment to do a floor plan. And those are the things that you really have to look at and know if they're your responsibility, because, again, if they are your mistake, then certainly I think you're going to have to absorb that cost. If you've said no to those questions, then you have to ask what did happen during that move that made the bill go higher. If the packing time was more than you anticipated because the client added an extra 3 sets of china or didn't do any of the tasks that they said that they would do, then you needed to have an open discussion with the client and remind them that this was not included in the original estimate and that adding these items, you know, such as the 3 sets of china, or not completing the things that they said that they were going to do was going to have an effect on their final invoice. You know, however, what I want you to know is, you know, on move day, when that client has asked you to pack that 3 extra sets of china, you know, I want you just to be able to say to them, you know, Mr. Smith, I am more than happy to do that for you. You just need to understand that it's going to have an effect on your final bill. And you need to have that conversation with the client along the way. I think this next question really falls in line with the one that we talked about. But this question is, what happens if a job changes midstream? They have added items or changed the move plan you originally set up. Well, this is actually a perfect time to address job changes. And if you can address them during the course of the sorting process, when you know that the final invoice is going to be higher than expected, you need to explain the reasons to the client and have them sign some type of change of order stating that they understand that their final invoice will be higher because of changes that they've asked you to make. Make sure you send a copy of this change of order with your final invoice, because then you don't have to offer that explanation of why your invoice was, you know, why your final invoice was higher, because the client has already signed that change for you. They've acknowledged that they've asked you to pack extra china, or they've acknowledged the fact that although they told you they would pack their own curio cabinet, they didn't do it. And just having them sign that change of order is a gentle reminder, you know, that, yes, you did have extra work that you had to do on their behalf. Our next question is, what if I am completely lost trying to do an estimate while in a client's home? What should I do? How should I find my bearings? You know, I have to tell you, I think my kids told me this joke a long time ago of how do you eat an elephant, and the answer really is one bite at a time. But I have to tell you, it's the same for estimating a client's home. You know, you do it one bite at a time, and really what that transfers into is you take each room step by step and don't try to look at the whole house as a whole. Again, look at it room by room. You know, during your estimating process, you can have the client walk you through the house the first time, and then if you need to take a second look, then you ask for permission to walk through the house by yourself. Now, I have to tell you, this one's kind of dicey because the client just met you, and they might not want you to do this. But again, you're not going to know unless you ask. And again, the best way to find your bearings, to try to refocus, because remember the first time the client walked around with you, they were probably talking to you the entire time. So again, I'm going to say to you, you know, room by room estimating makes the entire estimating process more manageable. This question is about pricing, and they just simply wrote, how many companies charge by box pricing? Well, lots of moving companies charge by box pricing, and there are a few move managers that charge box pricing, but I have to say this is probably not the most popular choice, and it may not be the best fit for you, but you never know. And, you know, again, you might want to try, you might want to experiment on yourself at home to see if that's something that you would be comfortable with. The next question, can you give us standard packing times? I have to tell you, you know, this, there's no magic answer for this. There are absolutely no universal standard packing times, except probably the moving industry would tell you that there might be. Standards really are for your company only. And our question after this really builds on the one that was just asked. Can you expand on packing times? I am still so unsure of how long it will take to pack a client's home. Again, I have to say to you that I want you to practice on your own home and time yourself. You know, the best way of knowing how long it takes to do something is to use a timer. And with no interruptions, just as you would do when you pack at a client's home. You want to kind of recreate those conditions. And you'll soon start to get a feel for how long it takes to complete a task. And one of the things I want you to do is remember to use the activity sheets we provided to you to track your times. It's just a very small way, a simple way of writing those numbers down that, so that you have them to refer to. And I know this next idea probably sounds crazy, but why don't you have other members of your family or one or two of your close friends also do this same packing exercise that you did? Use the timer, use everything, set up, you know, the same scenario, and it will give you an idea of how long it takes the average person to pack, and therefore you're going to do a better estimate, and you won't feel so uncomfortable with that part. Our next question deals with a standard form, and their question was, is there a standard form to use when calculating an estimate? The answer to this is no, but design your own to reflect how you think. I think in a very specific process. So I want you to think about how you would complete this job. What would you do first? What would you do second? What would you do third? And then design your estimating form on how you think. Each move manager has a different thought process, and your form, I think, should reflect how you can best do an estimate. It could also be a fill-in-the-blanks, a checklist. Anything that makes you feel comfortable is what you want to work with. You have to remember, this form is not for the client to see. It's your worksheet to arrive at your final price for this job. And then a couple of the questions actually were questions that got sent in, but they actually have something that all people have in common, and I think move managers since NASM began were asking these same questions, which is, do you discount your rate if you are developing a relationship with the community and the community might be paying your fee? Would you speak to the following questions? Do you discount your rate? If a community is buying a block of hours from you to provide unpacking services for new move-ins, you might choose to give them so many free hours for every block of hours that they actually purchase from you. So, you know, say that they're buying 20 hours of unpacking time for you. Are you going to give them X amount of free hours for every, you know, 20 blocks they buy? However, I cannot stress this enough. Remember, what you do today affects what happens in 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years. You have to believe in your worth and what you bring to the table. And if you choose to discount your rates, your colleague may do so as well, and then it just becomes a downward spiral. Again, I want you to believe in the value that you're bringing not only to that client, but you're bringing to the community as well. This was a two-part question, and they wrote, what do I do if the community says, we will pay you this much to do this move for this client. But I, as the move manager, know that it will cost more to move the client than the, what the community is willing to pay. You know, this is a really hard one because it's like that magic carrot is being dangled in front of you. But you have to remember that your rate has to be a sustainable rate in order for you to grow your business. And if you continue to take a loss on moves due to these type of incentives, then you're not going to be able to sustain your growth, and you're not going to be able to hire, you know, quality people and pay them what they're worth because you're continually taking these type of losses. Eventually, I believe what's really going to happen is you're going to cut corners and you're not going to be offering your client the highest quality of service available, which, again, is going to hurt your business. And when you don't offer quality service, that client is not going to be satisfied. And a dissatisfied client tells 40 people. A happy client tells 10 people. I think the bigger part of my concern for this is that when you constantly reduce your rates to meet the incentives that the marketing department wants you to meet, you actually fail to educate the senior communities about the value of your service. And in the long run, it hurts the move management industry as a whole. So you really have to think long and hard about what you want to do when those incentives come up. And this is actually our last question. How many hours of your time do most communities offer their prospects? Well, you know, I have to tell you, again, there's no standard for this, and communities all over the country offer move-in incentives from time to time. But I have to tell you, it's not a standard practice to offer it to every new move-in throughout the year, and the incentives always change. And a lot of times that has to do with what their corporate office, you know, says to that particular marketing department that they can offer at that time. This is a true relationship builder for you, and it's a relationship that you need to cultivate in order to receive these new move-in referrals. But again, I have to say to you, your goal is to be a partner to these communities, and they need to realize the value that they bring to the table. You know, when you help transition their new resident, in, and it's a happy transition, and they're unpacked, and they're put away, and they begin to live their life immediately when they move into that community, that new resident has the potential to offer, I guess I want to say, less concerns to the resident services director. Because although it's the marketing department that offers the incentive, in many, many areas, once that client moves in, their relationship with the marketing department ends, and their relationship with the resident services director begins. And that's really why there's value in your service. So, again, discounting your rates sort of discounts the value that you're offering to that community. To everyone who is with us on this webinar for Estimating Essentials, I hope that this additional set of questions and answers helps you to build a stronger and more profitable business. I want to thank you for tuning in, and I want to ask you to watch for future NASM University.